You're listening to Fucking Sober, the last episode of season one, episode 8.
Day 90.
90.
Fuck.
Oh, that's just me waking up late as fuck on day 90 of continuous sobriety. And also, qualification day. The day I've been dreaming and dreading since I first stumbled into the basements of AA. The day where AA says you've earned enough time sober to share your story in front of a group of strangers for 20 minutes. The day you carry the message to other alcoholics. The day you let God speak through you. The day your other sober friends get to judge whether or not you've actually been through enough shit to still be in their cool sober club.
Ow!
Giving a qualification speech in AA is its own special beast. Like giving a speech at a wedding after the best man speech. You want yours to be better than the person's before you. You want yours to change everyone in the room, to make everyone laugh and cry and vow sobriety all at once. Only you're not allowed to bring notes or bullet points. Nope. Your only preparation is to think about it a lot and let God speak through you as you share your experience, strength, and hope. It's a rambler's dream and a preparer's fucking nightmare. I'm going to have you guess which one I am. I've been casually fantasizing about this day for months by scrutinizing other people's qualifications, jotting down notes on the train, making weird impromptu sober jokes in my head. 2 days ago, I decided I would try to have a put-together look for my qualification. I bought a new pair of jeans, a cute button-up flower top, and a pair of statement earrings from a street vendor in Soho. I found that buying small victories felt calming, not to mention that my bank account had a nice padding after not spending a nightly $20 to $120 on alcohol and bar food. I mused on lipstick and watched tutorials about how to straighten my hair to get beach waves. 2 days ago, when I had said my day count, Desmond gave a whoo, and I couldn't stop smiling. 2 days ago, I knew in my soul that I had done it. The finish line was in sight. That I had made it to my goal. The 90 days AA prescribes to being a newcomer. After today, I would no longer be a day counter. That was the goal, right?
Alexa, play 90 Day Mix.
Okay.
I got this.
This morning, I woke up late, having slept through my alarm, something I haven't done in months. I hurried, grabbed my new pair of jeans, wondered where I put my shirt. Was it hanging up? I looked at my phone for the weather, then looked outside to confirm and put on a sweater. I hustled to put on my new jeans when suddenly they stopped at my thighs. Was this fucking possible? I wiggled in nothing. In all of my giddy shopping glory, I hadn't bothered to try anything on. Identifying trying on clothing as a trigger for drinking. How convenient. I was going to get on my fucking sober, cute jeans if it killed me. I sucked in and pulled.
Ow!
The pulling did little to secure the jeans, but it did rip a nail off at the stub on my ring finger. I pulled again, sucked in as if breathing was the problem instead of something that people needed to do. And while easing the pain of my finger by putting it in my mouth, I secured the button. I pulled my hair back in a bun, and my hairband snapped.
God damn it.
I looked at the time. I found a pair of old socks at the foot of my bed, grabbed my purse, and hustled to leave. The door closed, and I realized my keys and my only umbrella were on the other side of the door. 15 minutes into my 90 days of celebratory sobriety, and nothing was going how I wanted it to. I managed to get to work and breathe, but not without becoming soaked from head to foot first. I dried my hair in the hand dryer in the bathroom and hustled to my desk to find an email full of critiques on a project I thought was going well. Then I looked at my phone only to discover that it had a 5% battery left and no text messages. Nothing from Desmond or Davis or anyone in my newly sober circle. Didn't they realize that today was my 90 days? My 90. Right before lunch, I got an email from Anne with a virtual card attached to it. It was a dog carrying a sign in his mouth that said, "Things have been rough, but you made it through." I didn't read the rest of the card.
Welcome to the 12:30 lunchtime meeting, Onion Seed, group of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an
I'm sitting at the front of the room, and I'm shaking. I've been coming to the same room for almost the past 3 months, but now I'm sweating, and I'm going into a fight-or-flight mode, which is manifesting as a poop-or-not-poop mode. I hope my body continues to choose the not-poop response. Sitting up here with my fingers crossed, as if I'm someone who sits with their fingers crossed, I thought, is there anything else that one does where after 3 months of doing it, you give a public presentation? I imagined a world where after 3 months of working out at a gym, you'd show off your muscles to a panel of gym members. Or a world where I joined a knitting club and did a runway walk with my newly knit garments. I was suddenly angry and embarrassed that I was doing this. And I think that my genes were slowly killing me.
I've asked my friend Anita to share her experience, strength, and hope, celebrating her 90 days today.
Are you fucking kidding me with that lackluster applause? I got fucking sober for this? I could feel the anger inside me slush from one side to the other. I imagined myself standing up, flipping the chair over, and giving everyone the middle finger and heading straight to the fucking bar.
Fuck you.
But instead...
Hi, I'm Anita, and I'm an alcoholic. And today I'm celebrating 90 days. Am I recovered yet?
The waistband of my jeans pressed into my stomach, and I could feel me battle with the front button.
I...
And then, the front button of my jeans popped. I felt alone and embarrassed. I was failing. I was actively failing. Had anyone failed a qualification before? I picked my head up to change positions and I saw Desmond gave me a subtle smile and Davis give me a not so discreet thumbs up. Then I noticed Dahlia in the back and next to her, someone with their knees to their chest, wrapped in a ball. And so with wet hair, broken jeans, and no rehearsal. I spoke to that person, saying why I qualified to be here, why I came here 91 days ago. My story. And it sounded something like this.
Sorry, guys, I'm nervous. I'm Anita, I'm an alcoholic, and my story isn't unique. I don't even know if there's anything to say, really. I've been listening to so many stories from all of you, and it seems that pieces of your story are kind of pieces of mine. I guess I'll start from the beginning. I've always felt kind of ugly in my skin. I don't have a lot of memories of being a happy kid, despite a pretty great upbringing. I wanted to be different. I wanted to be different than who I was because I always felt different. Not in that special kind of way either. Just different. I got in a lot of trouble as a kid. I don't think it's because I wanted attention, though I did need attention. The kind of attention where you yell, "Look at me!" But as soon as someone looks, I'd hide, if that makes any sense. I feel like I was doing that and behaving that way from a very young age. Like there was something inside of me that just couldn't be satiated. I started drinking young, 10 or 11, with friends who, in hindsight, I guess, thought they were outcasts. I thought they were cool. I remember sitting on a roof with Zach after stealing some wine coolers from the suburban grocery store Kroger and feeling the summer night and the alcohol warm me and laughing uncontrollably over nothing. I remember distinctly feeling not different. Normal. I remember distinctly feeling all the things I craved. Love, I guess. And a bigger part of something. I don't have memories of feeling love prior to this. Not because my parents didn't love me. I think they did. But those memories just pale in comparison to the feelings I felt on the roof with Zach. And drinking with friends. I look at that 10-year-old now and, well, anyway. I acted out a lot between my tweens and my, like, teenage years. I got in a lot of fights and dramatic skirmishes and was overly sensitive to every critique, which I think to the outside eye looked like hormones as opposed to a cry for help. How do we distinguish an alcoholic from being a teenager who parties? As I got older, I balanced the scales. Like, I got in so much trouble as a kid that I had to do hundreds of hours of community service, which I bragged about on my college applications, which got me a dope scholarship to college. But my drinking did end up getting me in trouble in, like, the very stereotypical ways, like the kind you leave for writing your first indie film. Like when I got drunk when I was 16, I lost my virginity. And then I just always took a calloused view of sex and love from there. Or being in drunk driving accidents with a car full of friends. Those things, they should have felt like trauma at a young age, but I guess I have like a pretty weird sense of humor, you know? And a coping mechanism that hasn't failed me yet. The older I got, the more I looked around and just felt more different. Just that feeling. Even when I was secure to boyfriends and jobs. But other people seemed to hold on to friendships, boyfriends, and jobs. And other people seemed to genuinely laugh at themselves when they made a mistake instead of chalking it up to an unfixable internal problem. I felt like I had an unfixable internal problem. And every small mistake became a self-fulfilling prophecy that, that I had fucked it up. That I was a fuck up. And every argument that I ever had served as validation that I was a fuck up and no one cared. No one could care. I don't remember thinking that my drinking was a problem. I don't ever really remember feeling anything other than empty, though if you hung out with me, you'd feel like I was buoyant. And I wore my drinking like a badge of honor. I never needed a chaser. Drinking and working, drinking and exercising, drinking and biking, drinking and studying. I was proud of my drinking, so how could something that I was so proud of be something that was so problematic? I couldn't really wrap my head around that or connect the dots. There were a few incidents that messed with my drinking. Clearly traumatic moments weren't giving me any alerts. It was in the quiet moments, though. One night I split 3 bottles of wine with my new friend Rob, and apparently we spent all night gossiping and sharing and crying about our romantic nihilistic thoughts. We made all sorts of promises to each other to be forever friends, and when we woke up in the morning on the couch, Rob looked at me with just love, like, Like he was a newborn child and I was his mother. And I had zero memories of the evening. I had missed a moment in time that could have been beautiful. Another time I had gone out while I was living in Chicago and fell asleep on the train only to wake up with my passport, money, and ID gone. And someone to this day still uses that information and I'm still combating fraud as there are multiple credit cards opened up in my name. But these things never stopped me. Actually, not much could. I always found a way to survive and make the most of it. And I kind of thought that was like badass. Besides, the cards have always been stacked in my favor. I'm a cute white girl. I'm able to talk my way out of my third DUI. I'm able to get an extension of my rent with the bat of my eyes. I kept getting into epic romances and then would pull a Geographic and move, not understanding that the problem was actually me, not the boyfriends or the locations. And my latest Geographic was here to New York. And rather predictably, I immediately fell in love in the epically boring way that I do. And then we would break up. And I would continue to accumulate people to fill that hole. But I think... Well, 91 days ago, 91 days ago, I was juggling humans. I was going from one bar to hang out with friends to another bar to hang out with friends, flirting with whoever was willing to, Irish goodbying while tripping over my high heels and fighting with my on again, off again boyfriend via text. And 91 days ago, I was on the one train headed uptown. I was heading to Inwood. I live uptown. And the train was going local. And it was just really fucking hot. I remember it being really hot and there were no seats and I couldn't quite keep my eyes open. But I was in that lucid place where I didn't feel drunk, if that makes sense. Anyway, the train kept stopping and starting and stopping and starting and stopping and announcing that they would be moving shortly. And I needed air desperately. So instead of yelling, come on, I took matters into my own hands to cool off. And I walked in between the train cars on the little bridge. And so I was standing there feeling like I could breathe. And the train is stuck in between two stations and I'm texting with my ex and we're not exchanging romantic words. Rather, we're fighting and I'm saying horrible things, I'm sure. And I drop my phone and I watch my phone fall onto the tracks and we're still stopped in between stations. And I remember staring at my phone on the tracks with the train stuck between stations and I'm thinking, well, I'll just hop down and grab my phone. That'll be easy. So I hopped down onto the tracks with the train in a state of moving shortly. So now I'm on the tracks and there's nowhere to go. There is me, there's the train and the wall of the subway. And I pick up my phone and start to pull myself back up, but I can't quite figure it out. And I remember wondering about Ninja Turtles living down there. And I don't remember feeling scared or worried, just kind of feeling control of the situation where I was, even though the reality was that I was really about to get run over in any moment. So I'm struggling to get back up and some stranger apparently had seen me and ran out of the train car and pulled me up and started yelling at me. And I remember thinking like, what the hell is this guy's fucking problem? Why is he yelling at me? And I'm looking down at my hands and they're covered in blood and soot and glass. And I hadn't remembered cutting myself. And the guy and some other people on the train just kept looking at me and saying, what a crazy bitch. and all I wanted to do was sit down. So I got off the train and I'm shaking and I'm bleeding and I didn't want to go home or crawl into bed. I wanted to keep drinking. I didn't want to be alone and I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep. So I went to the bar near my house and I was trying to make sense of the situation. So suddenly I started to text my friends, mad at them for not being there, that they had let me exist without them. I had discovered that they were the reason I was covered in cuts and my hands were bleeding, and I couldn't stop imagining and reimagining what would have happened if the train had restarted, and I keep playing it over and over and again in my head, and I'm mad at everybody. I woke up the next morning having burned down every bridge I had made. And it's been 90 days and there are friends I still haven't reached out to. But I was really mad because I didn't die. Like, I know how that sounds. But every single day leading up to that, I had been wishing for it. Whether it was, like, for attention or just to stop the cycle. And I had been wishing that something bad would happen to me so I wouldn't have to do it myself. I hadn't put myself in that situation to die. I've done that before, and I popped right back up alive. But I was mad that I had missed out on the accidental chance. Like, poor me. And there are so many other people I loved who had gotten tired of living with so much sadness, and And if I couldn't die that way, I was either going to have to stop doing what I was doing or just wait for another situation to happen where I was going to die. And I guess that's what it took for me to come here with you people. I guess some people need a divorce. Some people need a psychotic breakdown. Some people need a commercial, some people need an intervention, and apparently I needed to almost get run over by a train. I needed that and, well, like a AA pamphlet that I found in my pocket. If that's not God, I don't know what is. How did I stay sober? I mean, I guess I should say I came to a meeting every day. I got a sponsor, the most patient sponsor of all time. I do the reading. I'm doing the step work. I make coffee, but really, I don't know. Right now it feels like a miracle. There are some days I would take it minute by minute. Other days I was afraid I was going to, I was so afraid I was going to drink. I just wouldn't leave my apartment. And in some ways, getting sober interrupted my life. Getting sober interrupted my big plans. But it turns out, I didn't know the first thing about making plans. It turns out that putting a pause on the drink button was only the beginning of my journey. Because I realized that getting sober is just the beginning part of recovery. Real recovery. As for the hope part, I don't know if I knew what hope was before. I sometimes used to hope a bus would hit me so I didn't have to stare into the abyss. I remember hearing someone share that my first week of sobriety and feeling angry I hadn't hoped for a more original way to die. I think I felt that hoping for good things was too vulnerable for me. Hope, a wish for the future. How could I ever hope for anything in a future where everything always went to shit? And now? I don't know if there's hope, but I can say that there's definitely possibility. Life has just slowed down in recovery. I get mad. I get so mad. I want to explode. Earlier today, I was so fucking pissed off. But today, there is a possibility that that can change. And that can change because I can start to see my own side of the street. And it can change because the end of my chapter could have ended epically by being run over by a train. You know, on the way here on the platform, there's like an ad on the subway that says, don't take the risk. 7 people died walking between moving subway cars. And I always imagine the sign ticking to 8. But I didn't get overrun by a train. Instead, I guess I got the chance to redo some things without totally and completely redoing everything. I keep hearing in the rooms these words, life beyond my wildest dreams, this epic promise to the recovering alcoholic. Like so many of you, I heard these words and I either felt inspired or I would be fucking angry. Like, what does a life beyond your wildest dreams even mean? And then one day, Doug shared that, he shared that he had a life beyond his wildest dreams, but nothing about his life had changed. Not one facet of his life had changed. But the way he felt about it did. The fact that he wanted it. This life that he now had, he wanted. And I guess I'm trying to say, although I'm kind of pissed off that this whole recovery thing doesn't end today, I don't want to go back to the way things were. I have what I've always wanted sitting in these rooms. To feel normal. All of you make me feel normal. All of you take away that pit of loneliness and you give me the tools to patch it up. And I can't go back to the way things were now. There's just a little bit of possibility now of hope, and I can't give that up, not for anything.
I was staring at my hands, so I picked up my head to take in everyone in the room and had 2 surprising thoughts. First, that I think I crushed that. And second, the need to say something I had never said, not in this way, not with this meaning. I said it to the people in the room, to the person in the back, to Davis and Desmond, to God and Kevin. But also, I said it to me. Thank you. And now, I say it to you. Thank you for listening. And thank you for helping us to stay sober one day at a time.
Hey, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
All my sisters and all my brothers.
Thank you for listening.
I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fuck yes.
Fucking Sober is written, produced, and sound designed by Katie Mack. Story development by Tani Lara. Sound mentorship and editing by Rebecca Seidel and Otis Gray. Anita is played by Katie Mack, and extra voices by Corey Farbstein. This episode features music by Jacob Derwin, Katie Burke, Death Roll Toll, Kiyoki Trosk, and K-Work. All artists involved with Fucking Sober have their own story with recovery. Our website, www.fckingsoberpodcast.com. Come and say hi. Our Instagram, fckingsober90_podcast. Per usual, there are no dues or fees to listen to the show, but if you dig what we do, consider making a donation. You can find us on Venmo, fckingsoberpodcast, or via our website on PayPal. This is our last episode of season one, Anita. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for season two, where we'll feature another day of 90 days of sobriety, one day at a time.
We did it! What?